Welcome back to Transform, a podcast highlighting the people and ideas shaping the future of senior living. I'm Austin Montgomery for Senior Housing News. On today's episode, I spoke with Frontier Senior Living President and CEO Greg Roderick. Frontier Senior Living operates 25 communities across the country, with additional management contracts and new developments planned as the company continues to grow its national footprint. Today, Frontier is focused on disciplined growth following a major portfolio reset, strengthening operations through standardized staffing, increased employee training, and a measured approach to technology adoption.
I think it's more just realizing this is where we're at and we all just need to hunker down and start construction.
Now, here's my interview with Frontier Senior Living CEO, Greg Roderick. Greg, thanks so much for joining us here on Transform.
My pleasure. As usual, I appreciate the invitation and love the opportunity to sit down with you guys.
Yes, we're really excited to catch up again. I know we caught up last at the Build Conference, so we really enjoyed your insights there and excited to have another great conversation here today. I think we'll be able to build off of that great conversation that happened last year and to have a new one today. We know there's been a lot of exciting things happening for Frontier, and I think probably, though, before we do that and dive in, for those who maybe aren't familiar with Frontier, can you just outline the portfolio slightly and just the overall footprint that the company has? I'm pretty sure most folks are familiar, but I always like to start off our episodes this way.
Absolutely. Appreciate the opportunity again. We are a company based in Dallas, Texas, and we have properties that span from the Northwest, Pacific Northwest, all the way through the mountain states of Nevada, over to Texas, up the Midwest into some of our Midwestern states, and then we are venturing all the way over to Georgia and Florida. So we are truly across the entire United States. We have 25 open and active properties with around, I would say, conservatively 5 or 10 management contracts that we're nearing the signing date on, and another probably 5 to 10 strong, likely new developments that we'll see break ground over the next, say, 12 to 16 months.
Wow, that's very refreshing and encouraging to hear some works on the development side. And we know that I've in some recent conversations I've had with folks on the M&A side, they're telling me that they're starting to have more conversations about development too. So I think we're starting to maybe see some, maybe a not necessarily changing in the tide, but I think a more willingness to have a conversation about development. So that's a completely different conversation that we'll have. But we know it's there's some themes that are starting to change. And I want to go back. I think change is a fundamental part of our conversation today. And you had said that at the time, being able to reform Frontier, shrinking the company, meant saying farewell to a lot of the things that you love about the business. And so I want to have you look back for a moment. What were some of the hardest decisions that you had to make during this reset? And also off of that, what did you learn about leadership from this experience overall?
Yeah, thank you. I think some of the toughest lessons that I had to learn was, you know, we were getting so much business. Business was just kind of coming to us, and we, you know, we were basically in business for a lot of years, and people knew about us, and our competition was doing well. We were doing well. I would say that the days of it's kind of easy to grow, we certainly miss that. We've had to really work hard to keep ourselves relevant, stay out in front of the business world and in the development community and the investment community. There's a lot of additional and new and very good competitors out there. So that's been one of the things I miss was just kind of the business, you know, build it, they will come type of mentality has, if we've had to really re-emphasize who we are, get the message out, perform extremely well. You know, like what we were just talking about on the investment side, you know, if you do really, really well, your building can sell for a pretty high amount. And we've seen a lot of buildings also perform really well and then exit. And that's been hard to say goodbye to those. buildings because we worked really hard and they're gone now. Although they're thriving, we'd love to see these buildings continue to thrive beyond us. We've also had to say goodbye to some people. You know, when you shrink from 130 buildings down to 30, you have to say farewell to certain people. Some of those people have gone on to do great things with other companies. So some have gone on to start their own businesses in or outside the business. And it's been great to see. You know, we're though it's hard to say goodbye, it's great to see people thrive.
Of course.
So, I mean, those are some of the things. I know I will also say our industry has had a lot of new technology come in that's really taken such a view off of so many other things. You know, there's the promotion of new tools available to our industry. Though they're very dynamic and they're very innovative, technology is going to continue to evolve and evolve and evolve and just get better. But if you look at Microsoft, Apple, or any other major network company, you will only find that it just gets better every single year, faster, cheaper, you know, et cetera. And so we, as a company, we have definitely moved software for our CRM, our accounting. We've adjusted, we've outsourced our accounting team to a professional firm. That's all they do. So we've made some pretty major and significant adjustments, but what we haven't done is divert our attention entirely to new technologies. We're learning about them. We're interviewing companies on remote patient monitoring like everyone else. We're just not quick to pull the trigger. We're being very mindful of the costs, of the liabilities, and of the, you know, in the future, it's just going to be better. So sitting back and holding off for maybe a year or two or even three or five, who knows? We're going to probably get in at a better price point and at probably a better point in time where those systems are just going to be able to speak better, be easily networked into our existing systems better, and just laying back for a moment and allowing all of those things to work themselves through.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point on the maturation of the technology in the space, because I think there are so many great stories out there and we're starting to see some really positive developments. I think one of the areas where I'm often hearing from operators that they're seeing the most benefit from are on things like remote patient monitoring, the ambient monitoring in the room technology that's really starting to provide new insight for folks. But you're totally right. I agree with you that there will be, I think, this, if you take a slower uptake mentality, you can be more methodical and decisive about what you want to use and how you're going to use it. So I think that's something everyone is thinking about if they're an operator right now, about how their tech stack should look.
Just on that front, you know, if you look at transportation of residents, do you buy a van or do you strike a deal with Uber? You can imagine in 5 years from now, what that's all going to be. I mean, it'll be nothing like it is today, in my opinion. Things like that are going to evolve so, so much.
Right. And I think I think it's only going to benefit the sector and provide more fulfilling experiences for older adults living in senior living communities. And
that's right.
Now let's tie it back to Frontier, and I want to bring it back to what happened with the reset in terms of looking at the portfolio. You had over 130 properties. Now you're around that 30 mark, just over two dozen. Some right. operators might view that as a setback, but I think Frontier, you really framed it as an opportunity. So I want to ask you this. How did becoming smaller actually make Frontier a stronger operator, in your opinion?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's kind of fun to look back at the last year and a half of when all this has transpired. We immediately took into account connecting very closely with all of our teams. Just like we're doing right now, just on screen, having several hundred training sessions go into place. Multiple training sessions per day were offered to a wide variety. Maybe it was focused on environmental services or clinical or culinary or whatever it might be, we were doing high frequency, very short, anywhere from 5 to 15 minute trainings on literally a very broad number of items. We did 371 trainings last year. This year we'll probably do around 250-ish, something like that. But really connecting with our people in that regard on so many different ways, even including vendors and guests to come in and speak on what different subjects. It was a very good connection. We saw our turnover drop drastically. The other thing is just being able to get around to 130 buildings for, you know, say half a dozen or a dozen of us was still a lot. To get around to this many buildings is we can get around pretty quick, pretty often, and touch them all the time. We just concluded our 20th month of net occupancy gains, consecutive months. Not, you know, some of those months, admittedly, we went up 5. Some months we went up 40. But having 20 months in a row, I got to tell you, we announce our successes internally and externally, and it really does build camaraderie and a great culture of winning. Everybody wants to win. And it's been really fun seeing our entire industry go up again, because that, you know, I know it seems like a long time ago, but when COVID hit us, you know, about 6 years ago or so, it was, you know, it was a terrible, terrible time. We all took our lumps on losing residents, you know, losing staff. It was fearful. It was scary. There were so many different issues that were hitting us, and all of our occupancy was dropping so fast. But to now have 20 months in a row, that just feels great.
Yeah, it's almost like a reset, or kind of back to where you were with that momentum building. Yeah. I think it seems like it's been that way for the operators that know their model, they know their markets. The last couple of years, even beyond that, they've been able to really rebase and really start to build that momentum. It seems like Frontier has obviously had that with the success you just mentioned.
Yeah. But, you know, and just to finish this item up, just getting back around and really, really honing our own skills, reminding us why we're in this business, interacting with residents and with our clients, and really becoming, you know, a tight-knit group again. Even though we felt like we were when we were big, but, you know, when you're the bigger you are, the more it's just there's strains, and you don't get that deep, deep connection. I'd love to see us get up to 40, 50, 60 buildings again. My ambitions of, you know, way really large again, they're probably mitigated to some level. And that could be just my own maturity and age, but it also does feel really good to be so engaged with our teams.
Right. And I know part of all of this really also centered around staffing. There was a large component around redesigning the staffing model, bringing in new trainings. I know we'll talk about that. So I want to shift and talk a little bit about how the staffing structure played into this reset for Frontier.
Yes.
Just referencing back to the original story from based off of the build conversation that you had with SHN senior editor Tim Regan, you talked about redesigning the staffing model around really a high regulatory environment. We'll use Oregon as the example here. Said it was one of the most stringent markets in the country to really operate a senior living community in. What led you to building your operating model around the toughest regulatory environment rather than tailoring it market by market? Do you want to explain your philosophy behind that approach? Because I think that's indicative of all these other changes on the staffing side that really have helped spur this momentum that you just referenced.
Absolutely. You know, having a particular staffing model that is set for all communities and based on the toughest rules and regulations for staffing, it is a very difficult framework. Why would you put yourself through it? But you are meeting the nation's highest standards at that point. you have one model to share. We're not saying, okay, if you're in this state, you can staff to this minimum or this one over here. We were able to completely put it in one frame, and actually, it sounds really odd. We're actually saving a lot of money. It sounds very odd, but we have one model, and it meets all states to a far higher level than anyone expected. We're saving money. We're able to now share this clinician or this business office manager. They can all speak the same language about how they staff. We can measure everything the exact same. And we can, our levels of care and how we price our levels of care based on minutes and different types of things, now they're all aligned. So everything is now perfectly aligned. What's the outcome to all of this is we don't have to worry about when the state surveyors come in, are we staffing appropriate? We know we're staffing the highest. So that's off the table. We don't have to worry about that one. Of course, the surveyors are appreciative of our commitment to that. But more importantly, our survey results have been fantastic. We've only had, last year we had, I think, all but maybe one survey in 2025 were deficiency free for the whole year. This year, I think we've had maybe one building have maybe four or five deficiencies for the whole year. I mean, so it's been a really out, the final results have really spoken for themselves. We're staffing well, we're charging the right rate, we're following the rules and regulations of in every single market. The number of complaints we're getting from residents or of families have been zero last year and this year. That's clinical, that's culinary, that's environmental. We are experiencing high levels of resident satisfaction. Those play really well in the world of social media. You know, when you're getting no deficiencies and deficiency-free surveys, you're getting happy residents. Well, I tell you, it feels good to be able to showcase those things. And we encourage our teams to showcase those good stories like that and let the world know, not just us, but senior living buildings are... They're becoming fun. There's a lot less apprehension these days. And competitors of ours, we consider them friendly competitors, but you know, we're all elevating our game. We're just getting better at food. We're getting better at activities. We're getting better at customer satisfaction. And it's really nice to see.
Yeah, you bring up that point of elevating your game, and I think that's a great way to summarize all of this happening at a time that's really critical for the industry, just given all the underlying things that we've chatted about at length regarding demographics. We know the demand's there, so if you've got the right model, we know that if you're able to connect with folks, that momentum can build on its own. In terms of some of the changes that resulted from the reset with staffing, has it changed your view on how staffing is structured for Frontier? And then also, you had mentioned this a little bit earlier about the importance that training plays in the process. Having these be digestible, kind of bite-sized trainings for folks so they're not thrown into a two-hour-long class to make their eyes glaze over. So in terms of thinking about training and maybe as part of this whole reset, has your view on staffing changed at all? Because I think it's a really critical moment for senior living operators to really figure out their staffing model.
Yeah, I mean, I think the staffing model that we've got is generally speaking the same. The caregiver, the ABST, Oregon-based staffing model, has probably been the biggest adjustment from the company standpoint. From my standpoint, I want to see my team members have the opportunity to have leadership roles. And that is like committees. And it's a great, you know, obviously we all want or have a safety committee for every location. That, you know, and that shouldn't be department heads. That should be a caregiver, a housekeeper, a maintenance person, maybe someone within the administrative team. But you want to put a team together, and you can do these committees and have resident, have team members have more engagement in leadership, have a more of a role than just this job getting this paycheck every 2 weeks, but having this job getting this paycheck and I'm on the welcome committee or the success committee or the employee lounge committee, whatever it might be, give employees more of a social role or a leadership role within their property. One, it reduces turnover. Two, it gets them far more engaged, builds value in them, and ultimately makes the building a better place to work, to be a part of. And so I think that's from my advice to anyone listening and interested in this is, you know, give your residents social roles for committees, but also give your team members roles. In our resident programs, we have resident ambassadors and committee members and welcome wagons and green thumb clubs and all sorts of different programs for our residents to be very engaged. I think we all can agree that growing older is also a little bit scary, but growing older with no purpose or a lack of purpose would be daunting. And so we want to make sure that our residents have these great opportunities, but just as importantly, our team members need to have the same type of authority, engagement, and leadership opportunities as possible.
Right, most definitely. Yep. And I think it'll be exciting to watch as that plays out. Now I want to shift in and get your thoughts on the pace of development. We know that obviously Frontier is maybe more bullish on new development at a time when others are a bit more cautious, but I think there's some strategy behind that. I want to get your thoughts on what you're seeing right now that gives you the confidence about development when maybe there's still that hesitation and maybe that broad-based development really hasn't returned to the space. I just want to get your thoughts on, from your perspective, why does it make sense now to really pursue new development at a time when it is trickier to get done?
Sure. I do think that new development is extremely necessary. There's a huge demand coming, and we're starting to see the early stages of the boomers now. We have seen a significant lack of development. Understandably, you know, from an investment standpoint, if you're just strictly into the real estate investment side of this business, buying existing versus risking new development and lease up, I certainly appreciate and understand the thesis. From someone who's been in this business for three decades or more, don't let anyone know how old I am, but nonetheless, I've always been involved some way in development throughout my entire career. And there's ways to reduce the risk, you know, calling Health Trust and getting a market study. Look at your NIC maps opportunities there. You can see where there's demand and where there's not demand. You can always engage like a market study specialist, like a Health Trust, and say, can you please run a market study in this particular town? Is there a need here? Even if better yet, this site, can you please tell me what the demand would be? And those are minimal investments to find out if this is going to work or not. And it overall, you know, the obvious states are going to be the sunshine, the smiley faces, you know, the Arizona to Florida. You know, where are people moving to? But there is a compelling demand and story in the Midwest as well. Not, you know, it's there. Wherever you see population growing, that's typically good. I mean, it's rule of thumb. But it's very wise to spend, you know, whether it's 3,000 or 7,000 on a market study and get a market study done. It's cheap insurance to find out where the demand is. It is helpful having a team built, you know, whether it's your general contractor and their subs, your project manager, your architect, your lender, your investor, you know, make sure you've got your team ready to go. because there is significant demand. I think I saw that Aaron Will was interviewed on by Lucas McCurdy recently, and it was just like, you know, we need this many hundreds of thousands of units built a year, and we're doing, I mean, extremely modest fractions of the numbers that are needed. We completed one about 2 years ago in the Texas, in the DFW market, and we just opened the last of the cottages, and you know, it's filling up at rapid fire pace. It's wonderful. We built the same building down in Spring, Texas, near Houston, a couple of years back, filled right up. So we're seeing the effects of building a thoughtful, beautiful property. We're not building for some of the numbers I've heard are out there. We've got a great team that we can call on time and time again, from lenders to investors to general contractors, et cetera, architects. We just try to keep the band together and just move them from town to town. And that has paid off in big dividends for everyone. But most importantly, the residents are getting such a fantastic property. Is that building just gets better and better and better. And we're hoping to announce this before the end of the year, at least four more of those 120 unit IL, AL, MC blend, and then maybe some cottages around it. Seems like the boomers do like the heavy IL, the cottages, but they also want to know that there is some assisted living there. There is some memory care there for themselves or a spouse in that event. But they're very dignified. I mean, I would say these buildings really take the fear out of retirement.
I like that. And in terms of, I'd wanted to ask, get some color on what those developments could look like for Frontier. I know you maybe can't give away too many specifics, but you just kind of given some top line color there.
Yeah.
In terms of what Frontier likes to do from a development perspective, what are some of the things that you think you really want to focus on? Sounds like having that mix of light acuity and then into that safety blanket of assisted living into memory care. Sounds like that's really important. But also, too, back to your point on demand. We know it's there, and you had made a pretty striking prediction that it was at the Build conference. You had said that every building will likely be full at 100% with a couple hundred people on a wait list in 4 years. And I think that 2030 mindset, I think, really speaks to where folks see the industry heading, kind of building off the momentum that we've spoke of here today.
Right.
So from a development perspective, sounds like you can't get shovels in the ground soon enough, but obviously you have to make sure the pro forma matches and your market study matches what you're trying to bring to bear. So from your perspective, why is it so critical now to be thinking of new development at a time when it's really not in vogue, if you will?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to get less expensive, number one. I think interest rates are kind of what they are. So I think with knowing that those are kind of fixed, you know, your land's going to cost this, the cost of construction is going to cost that, the interest rates are going to be this. You know, I think it's more just realizing this is where we're at, where we are, and we all just need to kind of hunker down and start construction. And I think we need to charge what we need to charge. You know, I don't think that we, you know, I don't believe you can go into a market and where the market is, say, $3,500 for a one bedroom and assisted living and charge a brand new $6,000 a month rent. I think that's a hard pill to swallow and to get behind. Although you might be surprised and you might get rewarded by just the fact that you just built a brand new building in a highly desirable market where there's pent up demand. So,
right.
You know, we've kind of gone in and realized we need to charge what we got to charge. We got to do this right. And we owe it to not only the residents and the staff, but to the lender, to the investors, et cetera, that we're going to run this like a business and we're going to do a good job. So I think just having some confidence in your rates and in your delivery of service, will for the most part be the key to success.
Right. Yeah. And I think one of the things too, I'm starting to hear now that there's more willingness of folks to look outside of maybe those kind of coastal areas, smile states. They're really starting to look, like you'd mentioned, the Midwest. I've seen a lot of operators really start to move in markets that aren't necessarily primary markets. They're secondary spaces, and maybe even some looking at tertiary areas as well. So from your perspective, does maybe the mindset shift of you need to look beyond your markets? Is that something you've kind of thought about as well? Because you mentioned that point on the Midwest, and that's immediately where my thought process went. So I want to get your thoughts on just kind of when you're looking at the markets. I think your point on having that market analysis piece makes a lot of sense. But are you more willing to maybe look at places you wouldn't have, say, 5 to 10 years ago?
Yeah, it's interesting you ask because I'm looking at a property with a client, an existing client, to acquire. And the property is in a very rural location within a state that we're already operating. And we're looking at it like, you know, could we add some IL apartments to the side of this building? Could we do some alternative things? Maybe even some RVs, you know, we're kind of like looking at things a little bit differently. It's tertiary for sure. It's actually rural, but the building itself is doing really well for the services it provides. The occupancy is extremely high. There's a lot of extra land. So now we're doing those studies. Can we add some more units? Can we do some alternative senior related type things? But yes, the short answer is yes, and the long answer is we are definitely exploring, you know, how do we maximize the appeal and building a long-term draw to this property.
Right, and I think you mentioned being able to have that momentum to, one, spark interest, but then also, two, to maintain it over the course of a new community as it stabilizes is really important. And I think I just had a great conversation with Kendall Corporation CEO Vassar Bird, and she had told me point blank, she had just told me that these demand fundamentals essentially are not enough. Like, occupancy is not enough to really say, okay, this is an indicator of success. I'm paraphrasing, but I think that point seems to be kind of underlying all of this forward-thinking mentality of maybe we have to look at these new areas. So I think it really plays into that as well. And Greg, I've got one last question for you, and then we'll get you out of here. You've spent nearly 4 decades in the senior living industry, and you've learned a lot, and you've experienced a lot of different cycles, most notably among them what you had just referenced in 2020 and the COVID recovery as well. Where does this current moment rank among the biggest inflection points that you've witnessed in the industry's history? Is the industry about to enter a next major growth area, or do you still seeing there could be some hurdles to getting there to meet the demand that's necessary? I want to get your thoughts because you've had a great vantage point. You've experienced a lot in the sector. So how does the current moment rank among all the different cycles that you've witnessed?
Yeah, I think this period, the last time I saw a period this profoundly affecting our industry, COVID was the start of this very difficult time. The last time I saw it this profound was 1990, when the Resolution Trust Corporation took over all the savings and loans, foreclosed all the assets, and it was just a general mess. But the winners were incredibly big. And I don't care if you're in car washes or senior housing, whatever sector you were gobbling up, you were rewarded immediately. It was fantastic. I think that our, and then later, of course, 98, we saw the big explosion of construction. 97, 98, 99 was just massive. We had Sunwest Management out of Salem, Oregon, exploding in size. Holiday Retirement building out, you know, vast numbers of buildings. Sunrise, that was their big push. I mean, these were big, big moments in our industry, exciting times, but also kind of flooded the market, anticipating today. You know, boomers are coming in 1998. Well, here we are, you know, 28 years later, and the boomers are here. So those buildings back then, they did well. Some took a little bit longer to fill, but today they've done great, great things. I would say this moment of in our industry has been probably the hardest last 5 or 6 years for anyone. Anyone who jumped into this business, say 7, 8 years ago, probably really regrets it. Anyone who jumped in the last couple of years is probably like, wow, this is the best thing I could have ever imagined. I think that we are going into we are going to have to do some major development, and we just have to do it, or we're going to have to buy hotels and somehow make those work, which will be very difficult.
Right.
Student housing communities, you know, student housing in the future. There's a lot of it today, and who knows what colleges are going to do? There's a population reduction underway. Fewer and fewer children are being born today. Fewer and fewer people are going to be able to afford college in the future, and states aren't going to be able to afford to keep them funded like they are today. So student housing could be a big opportunity, but those units are small.
Right.
So so I think we're kind of that leads back to probably development.
Right.
So I think people should be really thinking about putting their team together, putting their investment team together, putting their development team, their architect, GC, all these people, you know, put your team together, go out and, you know, find a site and, you know, get your feet into that world, because I think that's going to be part of all of our future. And there's a few guys in our business, good friends, like Kevin Benema has done a great job at Charter, teaming up with some fantastic developers and rolling out a good program of new developments. StoryPoint's done a bunch of them themselves. And there's all these good guys out there doing it, but there needs to be more of us doing the same thing.
Right.
So, you know, it's time. It's time for all of us.
Well, Greg, that's a wonderful spot to leave it on. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Transform Podcast.
My pleasure. Great to see you.
That does it for this episode of Transform. I'm Austin Montgomery for Senior Housing News. Thanks for listening.